You're listening to Video Villa Podcast, Episode 30, The Dead Zone by David Cronenberg. So Logan got to pick this one.
Yay!
As long as I got to watch the trailer first.
Yes.
The trailer passed. It's actually like a pretty heartfelt movie, like the meaning behind
it. Hold on. We got to wait to the end to see what you thought about the movie.
Oh, well, too late.
we'll see if you liked it by the end of it. But I want to keep on with that because I feel like that we did pretty good last time with Amazing Spider-Man.
Don't ruin it.
Yeah.
Soiled it.
Well, here's the thing is I've been trying to get Becca to watch this movie for a minute now. I kept on being like, I really want to do it. And you're like, I'm done with doing Stephen King stuff. It's too depressing. I don't want to watch it.
Valid. I don't disagree with myself.
But yeah, so it's been a minute that I've really been wanting to get her to watch it. And I was like, well, I really, really want to do it. And I don't know. Like, I probably read the book a year ago now.
Mm. When did I went, you read it or did Libby read it to
listen
you?
Here. Listen here. It's not cheating.
No.
Audiobooks count. That counts as reading. And also.
So my coworker brought up an idea with the whole like Audible type or audiobooks. Mm-hmm. And his point was, he was like, I have no problem reading because I was like, my thing with like physically reading is that I will like forget what I read at the beginning of the page before at any point. And I'm like easily distracted. And he was like, well, I don't really have that problem. But my thing is with audiobooks, it feels to me like I get to listen to that person tell the story.
Yeah.
Rather than me like making up a voice in my head and telling myself the story. Yeah. I was like, I didn't even think about it like
that. Yeah, because definitely like, I mean, it does like depends on what book you read and how the book is or what book you listen
narrated,
to.
Yeah.
Or how the book is wrote out. I mean, because this book, not a lot of it is through actually Johnny's perspective. It's a lot of people talking about Johnny.
Yeah.
Which, when they made the movie, they really did just make it Johnny's story, which I do like that. I mean, that was a plus sides, because if you haven't read the book, we're going to talk a lot about the book
He's going to talk a lot.
Yes,
about
I'm going to talk
we
a lot.
We are not. I didn't do the book.
But, well, that, I am going to talk about a lot about the book, so if you want to read the book first, come back when you're done. It's done a little bit different, this style. I just got done doing The Keep, and that is a lot of inner monologues, a lot of thoughts. You're reading people's thoughts or listening, you know, what's going on. And so this book, Stephen King does that, but then he also does it in a way where it's very not boring because when you're getting into reading and you just, a lot of the dialogue that you're reading are thoughts and so forth. Instead of like the conversation, I get a little bit, taken away.
Yeah.
I start to lose interest on someone's just thoughts versus what's actually happening in the
Makes
story.
Sense. Well, cause also like when they're narrating people's thoughts, it can kind of get like a little confusing. It's different if like a book focuses on like one main person's thoughts throughout the book. But, like, when you start diving into, like, everybody's thoughts, it just, it intertangles too
much. And this book also, like, in the book, it goes, you know, you get a lot of Sarah.
Yeah.
You get a lot of Craig's thought process, the way his mind works and his storyline. A lot of the book, there's a big chunk of the book, you get a lot of backstory on Greg. Greg Stilson's journey to become the Greg Stilson's we get in the movie. So that takes up a lot of the book. And this movie, we don't really get that. And I think that's fine because I didn't really care for those points. The book is good, and this will be the first time I say it. But the book, the movie's better than the book here. Mm. Yeah. This movie is like, it is. David Cronenberg did a very, very good job with the film. He made some changes, and I do like the changes that were made. There was one change that was made in a storyline. I'll get to that once we start to do the breakdown in the movie and scene by scene replay. But for most of it, I really feel like this movie is done very well. It's very, very well shot. Christopher Walken knocks it out of the park as Johnny. Freaking Martin Sheen as Greg Stevenson.
Yeah.
Did you get Donald Trump vibes when you're watching the movie from his character?
I mean, not necessarily, but I also like wasn't looking out for it.
Well,
it
wasn't intentional because this movie was in 83, well, you know what I mean?
Duh. But I mean, I also wasn't really looking out for it, and not gonna lie, I like don't really keep up with politics much.
Oh no, I don't either. And,
well, I know you don't, but like I don't even think I've seen like little clips of any of Trump's like speeches or anything, because I just like I don't know, I'm ignorant in that realm, which is probably wrong, but so it'd be hard for me to make a comparison.
Yeah, I just felt like just the way he was talking to the people in certain of the scenes, I was like
that. I do know he evades questions, like actually answering questions, meaning Trump, apparently.
I don't know. I just got like little vibes.
Allegedly.
Like that. But anywho, yeah. So like, yeah, I mean, those are just little things that I kind of thought were kind of funny when we were watching the movie.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I'm very happy you finally got to watch it. And it is. I remember watching this movie a long time ago and enjoying it, and then going back through my rewatch and, you know, years later, I'm like, oh shit, David Cronenberg did it. I just didn't even think about it at the time.
Yeah.
I just watched a movie. I didn't think about who was the director. Well,
yeah, as you find like directors you like, I think you get like a fine eye for them. So then when you see that they made a movie you've already seen, you want to like kind of go back and watch it. Or if they make a new movie, you're more prone to watch it.
Oh, no, yeah. And David Cronenberg, I mean, he has made some of the best movies. Like I enjoy, don't get me wrong, like not everything he does is a success.
Yeah.
I don't like everything that he's made. I mean, The Brood is fantastic. Very, very dark. Scanners is awesome. I will say I do like the sequels more, just because the Scanners, the first ones, it's a little slow.
Mm-hmm.
As far as like the movie it, as a whole, it's a great movie.
Yeah.
The Fly, I mean, Videodrome. It's great. It's great. He has made some of the best. It's weird. His movies have like a feel to you. Like after you watch it, after you get to watch his movie, you feel a certain way.
Yeah.
Especially the movie Dead Ringer. Dead Ringer is like, I don't really like the movie, but after I watched the movie, I just felt awful.
Mm.
It's kind of like, it's, I mean, and it, I don't know if like, it's definitely like a partake on like drug addiction, but the way he tells the story about drug addiction, and it's kind of like, you know, you got these people, these twin surgeons that are like on the top of their game, and they're freaking right. They're creating and making medical history, and then one of them gets addicted to drugs, and it's just
haven't we watched that?
No.
I feel like we watched something like that.
No. I mean, they turned it into a TV show. I think it was on Prime. I never watched the TV show. But yeah, after the end of the movie,
TV show.
Huh?
I said I love me a good TV show.
but after the movie, I just felt a certain way. Same thing with The Fly. You just feel a certain way, and like this movie, you kind of leave, and there's some heart-wrenching parts in this film that I really, really do like, and I really think were well shot. I don't know. It's just one of those. I think this is one of the best Stephen King adaptations of the film. I really do. Cujo is a strong second. His best adaptation as far as like book to film is definitely Firestarter. It is the exact same. Like that book is the movie. You just have to cut out some of the stuff for length purposes, but the book is the movie and the movie's the book. I mean, 100%. It is a direct copy.
Yeah.
And the remake was, y'all don't hear me say this a lot, but the remake was horrible.
Mm.
Horrible, horrible. The only good thing about that movie remake is the freaking soundtrack, because John Carpenter did the soundtrack.
Yeah.
That was the only good thing about that movie. That's it. I mean, that movie, they had, and I love Zac Efron. There was one good scene at the end of the movie, and everything else was just, it was just a mess.
Yeah, I mean, we watched Firestarter.
Yeah, that was the one, after I finished the book, I was like, yeah. I want to watch this, and I was just like, and through the whole movie, I'm just watching like, oh my God. And I just kept on saying like, why is this so bad.
Yeah.
Like, why is it so bad? I don't know. And I looked up the reviews before watching the movie, and it had really low ratings. Mm. And I was like, why? It can't be that bad. And then I watched the movie, and I was like, oh.
It is that bad.
Yeah. That's I hate saying that. I hate saying that, but man, well,
you can't like everything.
They just dropped the ball on it really bad. Mm. Really bad. But that's enough about other movies. I'll actually talk about the movie we're talking about. I think this movie's awesome. Stephen King wrote a screenplay for the film that wasn't used. It was originally supposed to be used because the Jeffrey Boehm and Stephen King went back and forth writing screenplays. Jeffrey Boehm's first was the first one, and they asked Stephen to write his own screenplay. There's a lot of things about the producers and stuff like that, like what was going behind the bar scenes. They're like, I don't like this, I don't like that. But David Cronenberg said in an interview where, like, no, I turned down Stephen's script. It was just too, meaninglessly brutal. Mm, and he just don't think the film needed to be like that. Which is good. Cause I mean, the book isn't brutal. Sometimes, you know, Stephen King does push the envelope quite a bit, I mean, it's definitely stepping on the envelope a lot. So those changes were made, and we kind of got like a film with like three heads behind it, because David Cronenberg rewrote some stuff in the script too as well. So I mean, if you want to look at it, like, written by three people. But yeah, I mean, Jeffrey Boehm did good stuff as well. I mean, he did Lethal Weapon. He did Interspace that Joe Dante directed. He wrote the screenplay for that. He wrote the screenplay for Lost Boys. And then Funny Farm, which you liked Funny Farm with Chevy Chase, right?
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah, we watched that during Christmas.
Yeah.
Which I always label it as a Christmas movie because it ends on Christmas.
It ends on Christmas.
Because it's Christmas. So that makes it a Christmas movie.
Noted.
But yeah, and then there's a couple little things I looked at behind the scenes. Like, so apparently when, like, Johnny, like, when he does his little flinches when he's having his visions, apparently David Colbert was shooting a gun behind the scenes to actually get real,
like,
flinches.
Like an authentic
flinch.
Yeah.
Universal sued the film while making it at the beginning, you know, the beginning vision scene with the girl in the bedroom.
Yeah.
So apparently there was an E.T. doll in the background. And they were suing. So they had to reshoot that scene, which I thought was kind of funny. A little ridiculous for them to sue over just something in a
child's bedroom at that time, which would have been realistic to begin with.
Like, it's ridiculous. Yeah.
I haven't seen E.T. in a long time. That's what we should watch.
Yeah, I haven't watched that in a long time either. I mean, it's been years. It's like not something like.
I don't think I've watched it as an adult.
No, I haven't. Yeah, me neither. No, I mean, it's...
On the books.
Basically the character of Stephen King loosely wrote the character after getting an idea from a real live psychic named Peter Hurkos. He like fell off a ladder, and then all of a sudden he believed he had these psychic abilities. I didn't do a deep dive into that because I just didn't care enough to. But it was loosely based off of that. And then actually Stephen King, when they were telling him it was making this into a film, he really wanted Bill Murray to play Johnny. Which, to be honest, Bill Murray can do serious stuff.
Yeah.
He can do serious stuff. I'm kind of glad they didn't go that route, because I feel like this is a movie that really doesn't need any humor.
Yeah, I feel like Chris Walken did a great job.
Oh, yeah. I think Chris Walken did a fantastic job. He just played the Johnny character well. He's also tall and thin, and Johnny was tall and thin in the book. And as the book progresses, he just gets thinner and thinner as basically his gift
sucks the life out of him.
Gives him a sickness, basically. David Cronenberg actually wasn't going to do the film until he met with Deborah Hill, which Deborah Hill worked with John Carpenter for many years, working like The Fog, Halloween, so forth. Until David Cronenberg sat down and met with Deborah Hill, and that's when he was like, okay, I like her. I like where this is going to go, so I feel confident. And so that's when he took on the role and be the director, because he turned down a couple of times.
Gotcha.
They also scrapped in the movie, in the book, he has a brain tumor, and that's what eventually, like, he, it's progressing and killing him. They just completely scrapped that from the movie. Which is, I think is fine. We don't need to explain he's got a brain tumor. I like the fact that his gift is just sucking the life out of him.
Yeah.
Every time he uses it, it drains.
Yeah.
It kills his body itself.
Yeah.
And I think that was a well way of telling that story.
Yeah.
And then also, as most, a lot of David Cornberg movies, it was filmed in Canada. So, I mean, he's Canadian because he, I mean, even his earlier stuff like Shivers and like, Rabid, all that stuff is like you can tell it's shot in Canada.
Mm.
Like even like I was talking about like The Brood, like you can tell like the street addresses look like no street addresses you would ever see in the US.
I gotcha.
This movie's obviously definitely different because it's meant to be in the US because it's the, you know, the government and so forth like that.
But what kind of government does Canada have?
I don't know.
No, I'll Google it.
I don't know social economic stuff. Is that what that is? That's technically social economics, right?
I think so, kind of, maybe.
I don't know. I don't know.
I did not do good in social studies. I know that.
But if you want, I mean, that's really like, you know, like most of the stuff that I like to really enjoy talking about is once we actually get into the film, because I really like talking about the movie. Did you want to read the back and do the backup breakdown?
Yes. Everyone's favorite. So Stephen King's The Dead Zone. Christopher Walken stars in this tense, gripping screen adaptation of Stephen King's best-selling novel, The Dead Zone. One fateful night, Johnny Smith, Walken, smashes head-on into an enormous truck. For 5 long years, Johnny's plunged into a deep coma. When he awakens, he discovers that his youth, his career, and his fiancée, Sarah, Brooke Adams, have all been lost. But Johnny has gained something extraordinary, psychic powers, allowing him to see visions of the past, present, and the future. In episode after episode, Johnny is propelled into horror-filled supernatural experiences. Desperately, Johnny seeks seclusion, but a moral decision must be made. Should he use his powers to change the future of mankind? Martin Sheen gives a chilling portrayal as a sinister, psychotic senator, hopefully expiring to the U.S. presidency. The end. And then on the back, you get a picture of Christopher Walken sitting at the table. And then you get Frank Dodd, which is the first death, his mother shooting at Christopher Walken or Johnny and the other sheriff. And then when Johnny and the Senate are shaking hands in the end.
I like how you describe the back of the box.
I always do. I always either describe like the front or the back.
That's good for the audio listeners.
Yeah. And this one doesn't have any reviews. So now it'll be like New York Times or anything like that.
Well, I mean, the thing is like he's like during the making of this film is right around when Videodrome came out, and it did not do well financially. I mean, that movie is wild.
So I guess no one had anything to say about this one.
Well, yeah, I don't know. I mean, just it depends on like, you know, some of these like movies that are like humongous, they'll have stuff on them, like, you know, like we saw Ghosts, but like this is the first printing of it, so sometimes the first printing there's not gonna be a bunch of stuff on it.
True.
Like the
reprints. Makes sense. But yeah, so the story kicks off where they are at the school, and it is Johnny. I always like want to call the actors by their real names, not their actors' names, or their character name. But yeah, so it's Johnny and Sarah, and they both work at the school as teachers or as educators. And they meet up in the hallway to greet each other, and they end the evening at the fair enjoying themselves. And Johnny takes Sarah back home.
Yeah, this seems a little bit different so far in the book. I mean, we do. It does suck because like the fair scene, and I get for timing purposes they probably didn't include it, but like we get him kind of like slightly using his powers for the first time.
And I didn't pick up on that.
Well, it wasn't in the in the book. Gotcha. While they're at the fair, that he like uses his powers for like the first time to win like a gambling game, and then. And it's kind of fun because all these people are gathered around. He doesn't understand, but it's almost like he's got this sixth sense. He's like, I know what's going to win.
Gotcha.
And he keeps on picking it. And then you get all these people all around town. And like, you know, there's like this one giant tall farmer man that was just like, because they basically the fair, it's a game where you're meant to lose. But Johnny knows because of the tricks.
I think that's all fair games.
Oh, pretty much. Yeah.
Hey, and I've won a couple goldfish in my lifetime, so I'll take that. And for some reason, my carnival goldfish, like, now, like,
I they usually die. This.
Yeah, no, like, I just have some, like, sixth sense to be able to keep carnival fish alive for, like, years. I had one for 3 years. And the thing is, my parents would let me play the game because they knew, like, they're going to die. Like, the fish, they're not going to live long, okay? Yeah. It's a fish. It's a carnival fish at that. No, I'm going to keep those puppies alive.
I don't know how you do it. That was like, because we always, when I was little, we always got a fish, like a thing from Walmart, and they would always die.
Do you remember when the Walmart section used to have wall fish?
That's where we got them.
Yeah. My favorite pet fish to get were the ones with like the big eyes that are popping out.
I didn't have the cheeks. I remember the ones with the big cheeks that would pop out.
Oh, there's ones with, I mean, I guess it's kind of their cheeks, but it's also their eyes.
I think they were called bubblegum fish because it looked like they had a mouth full of bubblegum. I can't remember. It was something like that. I remember those. Those were really cool.
I like the ones with like the big bulging eyes.
Yeah. I remember the ones that look like mini catfish. I like those with the whiskers.
Oh. I also always wanted like the snails. The little cleaner ones. They're cute.
But yeah, so back to the movie, like, that scene, it sucks that we didn't get that scene because it would have been kind of cool seeing him. Like, so we understand, like, hey, these powers there were all along. It wasn't until he had an accident kind of, like, made them grow.
Yeah.
But yeah, unfortunately, they, as he is heading home from their evening and he's, you know, they're basically about to take the relationship to the next level. And, he just decides it's not the right time. He wants it to be a little bit.
Yeah, to stay the night.
To stay the night. He just wants it to be a little bit more special, so he's going to head home. And that's when he runs into a tanker of an 18-wheeler.
Because it was raining.
Yeah.
And Sarah tries to get him to stay, because it's raining, to use that as an influence. And unfortunately, he leaves and hits the tanker.
Yeah, and this is what sends him into his 5-year-long coma.
Yeah.
And next, he wakes up and we meet Dr. Wysick, I think it was. Is that how you say it? Wysick? Wysick?
Something that. Wysick? I don't know. Something.
Something like that. We meet him and he like basically lets him know, like, you know, hey, you've been in a coma. And then he brings in his parents.
Well, first, he didn't tell him he had been in a coma.
He didn't tell him how long it had been.
Yeah. He more or less just treated him like he had just woke up. Because then the doctor, like, corrects Johnny's mother when she makes some sort, like, you've come back from your transcendence or something like that. And then that's when the doctor tells her to remember what we talked about.
Yeah, when he wakes up is what makes him confused is he's like, I was in a car accident. Why don't I have any bandages? That's when he's like, you've been in a coma.
Yeah.
And then that's when his parents show up, and then he asks, like, how long?
I also like how he's like, your parents are right in the other room. I'm going to go get them. And the parents are literally on the other side of the door.
And then, like, they basically explained to him, like, hey, it's been 5 years. And they were like, you know, what about Sarah? And then in the book, his mom is very religious, very, very religious, and we're to the point where she, like, she pays those preachers money, you know, for like, prayers and stuff like that. It's really sad in the book when you get to those chapters because it's just – And the dad is just like, his dad is the sweetest dad in the world in the book. And it does suck when we get to those, like that part in the book where it's just kind of like you see this feeble old woman being taken advantage of.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, there's always those gut-wrenching parts that just make you upset to your stomach in Stephen King books. But yeah, they basically inform him like, I'm sorry, honey. But
yeah, she's married.
She's moved on. Yeah. You know, it just crushes him. Then we don't know how long, but it's been some time after he's woken up and a nurse goes in to check on him and he's completely just sweating bullets. And then, she goes, you know, like wipe the sweat off him and so forth. And he touches her hand and then he gets his first real vision.
Yeah. So he sees Amy, her daughter, stuck in a house fire and he keeps yelling, Amy, Amy, Amy. Fire, Amy, whatever, back and forth. And then finally the nurse gets it out of him that like there's a fire at your house and you need to go, you know, quick, you have time.
Yeah.
Which he was accurate. There was a fire at her house. Mm-hmm. So,
oh God, this scene in the book when it comes out of this part is like, it's one of those scenes, you know, when like you want to scream, like, you know, like, or let's just say someone takes a right and then, but you're like, no, you need to go back. You need to take a left. Go back. No. And it's kind of like one of those scenes where like, no matter what he does, no one wants to believe him and so forth. Cause I believe it's his trainer. His trainer is a woman, and he's like, she's like doing sit-ups or something, and he touches her wrist, and he's like, and he gets the first vision.
Yeah.
I do like the way the book does this. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's really well done. And the scenes where he's sitting in bed and it's on fire, like the bed that Chris Walken's in, it starts to catch on fire. Oh God, that's a good scene. Yeah, I love it. It's very intense, but also like really well shot.
After this scene, he is meeting with the doctor, and the doctor's trying to talk to him and is being honest with him, telling him that it's going to take a lot of physical therapy, that it's, you know, it's going to be grueling, and kind of these things, you know, talking him through the next steps of what's going to happen. But his doctor not promises him, but makes the commitment of like, we're going through this together, and I'm confident, like, you will walk.
Yeah, you will walk again. It's going to be painful, but you will walk again.
So while that interaction's happening, they shake hands just to be cordial and to say their goodbyes. And Johnny has a second vision, which isn't necessarily a vision, but it's looking into the past and reflecting something that the doctor doesn't know about the current.
Yeah, yeah. Basically, we see that the doctor was a
refugee of war.
Exactly.
His mother gave him up during war, but couldn't come with him.
Yeah, I'm sure it's probably World War II. That makes more sense. But like, you know, and his whole entire life, he thought his mother was dead.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then he sees this happening, but then he sees who his mother is. Mm-hmm. And now he knows everything he needs to know about them, his mother. And he's informing him, like, your mom's still alive.
Yeah.
And I know her name and everything. I know exactly where she lives. And he was like, Johnny, my mother's dead.
Yeah, like, I promise you.
My mother's dead. He's like, no, she's alive. Her name is blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Excuse me. And then when we get the next scene where the doctor goes to, you know, well, let me see what's going on.
Let me try it out. Yeah.
And there he goes. His mom answers the phone.
Mm-hmm.
And so he relays the message back to Johnny. He's like, I don't know how you're doing this, but I've heard about this happening.
Yeah, he says, I don't know if this is an old power or a new power brought on by the accident, but it is what it is, essentially. Like, you obviously have something going on inside your head that's giving you these visions.
Yeah, and that's when he kind of informs him. He's like, well, did you talk to her? And he's like, I couldn't, because it's not meant to be. It's not meant to be, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
This is the way our lives took us.
Yeah.
There's no, you know, there's nothing going digging up the past.
Yeah. So Johnny's outside working with, I guess, like, the physical therapist that's trying to help Johnny, you know, walk out front of the facility. And he ends up seeing Sarah for the first time because she came to visit. She had gone to the building and they told her Johnny was out front. So this is the first time that he's seeing Sarah essentially since the night of the accident.
Yeah.
However, Sarah's moved on, had a child, which he doesn't know yet at this point. So they go inside to chat for a little bit and to catch up, essentially. He ditches physical therapy to go catch up.
Yeah, and it's kind of funny when he's like, she's like, hey, Johnny, they told me I could find you outside. He goes, I am.
Yeah. Short and sweet.
I don't know. I thought it was funny. It's like, I am.
Yeah. So Sarah also asks him about his powers because it's all over the press, and she just wants to know if it's true or not. And he does. He kind of like confirms it in a sense. And at this point in time, Johnny now knows that this is all over the press, and he's considering speaking up about it.
Yeah, and then also we get the scene, like, the scene I really like is where Sarah's,
well,
she leaves, and you see her, like before she pulls out of the institution, she kind of, like, has that little
meltdown
in the car, where it's like, and that's, think about that. Like, you know, the person at the time that was the love of your life, you know what I mean?
Yes, I didn't know they were fiancé. I didn't know they were engaged. I thought it was just a girlfriend.
I mean, that the love of your life, you know, and, you know, you as pretty much assume like they're in a coma. They're not waking up. It's been years. You know, I don't know how long someone can hold on to that. You know what I mean? But think about it, like, you know, 5 years, and then you just like, well, it's never going to happen. And then you just make the decision to move on.
Yeah.
And now you've got this life created, and she has a son with this, a wonderful husband. And, but all of a sudden you get this call is like the, you know, you're.
The original love of your life, like, is back.
Yeah. And like, how do you take that information?
Yeah.
That's gut wrenching.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, I don't know. It's rough.
Yeah.
I, like,
oh, yeah, absolutely.
And it's just, if you like,
it's once again, Stephen King pushing like the unimaginable.
Yeah.
But what could totally be possible one day.
And that's the thing, is that's one thing I like when I like to watch movies. I don't know if I'm not the only, I'm probably not the only person to do this, but I immerse myself into the movie. Like, I am in the movie. And so, like, I think when people are going through the shit, I think about going through the shit.
See, I do the same, but like with reality TV shows. And I'm like, this is how I would handle that argument. This is how I would act in, you know, Bad Girls season 3 in this argument.
Well, that's not reality.
What is
you mean,
it then?
You said Bad Girls, you mean Good Girls?
No.
Oh, is Bad
it's
Girls
trash TV.
Is Bad Girls a different show?
Yeah.
I've never heard of
Bad Girls Club.
Oh, no.
Yeah. It's just like, you know how they have Real World and they put them on like a bunch of, they put like a bunch of people in, or like Jersey Shore or whatever, a bunch of people in a house. Mm. It's a bunch of girls that like are controversial and high conflict, and they all like get put in a house together.
Oh.
And then videotaped.
Oh, God.
So there's like a lot of arguments and stuff and people like bickering and things. It's just trash TV. I don't immerse myself into movies.
Though. I used to watch like I think Real World would be the only thing.
It's pretty good. Trash. Some seasons were good, but some seasons were eh.
I think I stopped watching after the DC season, after they went and joined the DC. I think that was like, I was just kind of like, I don't really give a shit about this anymore.
Yeah.
I mean,
did you guys ever watch Survivor?
No, no. But my buddy Brian submitted a tape to the Real World.
Go, Brian. I would want
to see that video. Oh, my God. I would love to see that video, because Brian.
Audition tape.
Brian, it was.
Hey, we were ready. We were looking at the registration form to do Supermarket Sweep.
Oh, no.
So.
No. If they didn't cancel that damn show, I mean, we would have won. We would have brought all the money home.
We had a team name picked out.
Potato.
Everything. Yeah.
Team Potato.
Yeah, I love potatoes.
Oh, I mean, no, that show was.
It was ours.
Oh, my God. That show was great. The original is good.
The remake. The original is good, too.
Yeah, but
I like both.
The remake was really good with the lady from Leslie something. I forget her last name.
Yeah.
From Saturday Night Live. I really liked the remake. And I remember, it was funny, the first season they came out, and I think this was right shot probably prior to COVID, because we were watching it during COVID.
Yeah.
But I remember, I'm guessing that too many people won. And they had to make the rules a little bit harder, because then when season 2 came out, they made the final round a little bit harder. That was our show. I wish they didn't want to cancel.
So I'm not trash from Brian, okay? Whoever Brian is.
No. Brian was
ready to put all of my cards in the basket.
I think literally it was like him like playing with the football with the shirt off and stuff like that. Because Ryan was pretty like really in shape. Yeah. So like I mean, that's things like, it was all about like the way someone looks too. At that point.
Oh yeah. They care about all that kind of stuff. Like the persona you put off, the everything.
He had a super thick, you think my country accent's thick. You know, his accent was thick. And it almost.
Everybody in Tennessee has a thick accent.
But almost to the point where like, I love Brian, but like almost to the point where like, man, I really think you're laying it on. Do you really talk that slow in country? I don't know.
I mean, some people probably just talk like that.
I mean, yeah.
It takes a lot of effort to fake.
I'm not looking
accent.
Here to be judged based off my personal opinion.
But you're judging Brian judging on his accent.
Oh, yes, I get it. All right, whatever. Take it back. I'll cut this out.
Anyways. No, so Johnny does agree to do the press. He talks to the doctor. The doctor will be with him while he does it. However, it goes like very much so like south.
Well, so he answers the questions that they want, and then he's just got this dick journalist.
He keeps it open-ended, and then he gets your typical like news journalist that is pushing the agenda, and is kind of like making jokes of him.
Yeah, like, yeah, it's definitely he's
not taking him serious.
Exactly, and he's just being like, "Oh, it's by touch. Well, here, let me sit here. It's am I going to win the lottery and stuff like that? Yeah, you know what I mean, all like
And then so Johnny gets upset and brings up how the journalist's sister committed suicide. So he's like, "Do you want to know why your sister killed herself?" And
he's like, "Yeah, do you want to know if you were the reason? Were you the reason why your sister killed herself?"
And
it gets
like really intense. And then they kind of like push each other back, or he kind of pushes Johnny. Johnny falls down. However, unfortunately, Johnny's very elderly mother that has just gone through 5 years of hell is also watching the news because this is a press conference. And, has like a stroke or a heart attack, or unfortunately, loses her life once Johnny gets to the hospital to see her.
Yeah, it's really sad. I mean, and also like in the book, she's described like in the book, we get a little backstory of her grieving the process that Johnny's been in the coma, and she basically begins to eat her feelings, eats a lot of like sweets and stuff that. So she's like a very large lady, which is very common in Stephen King books.
Maybe he likes big ladies.
He might like some big ladies. You know what I mean?
I'll go on a Reddit deep dive. I'm just saying, there's a conspiracy for everything.
Well, there's a, he always, every book that he has a, I would say he always calls them fat, but like, I'm just being, but he always writes a very voluptuous, large woman into almost most of the books I've read.
Yeah,
of his.
Well, that, and then sometimes he goes to extreme and makes people like certain characters. Like, oh yeah,
The guy's wife is, I think he like said she's like 280 pounds or something like that, and she's like 5 feet tall and stuff. Mm. It's like he's very descriptive on how large she is, and then he says her. By the time his mom died, I think his mom was 300 pounds when she died. The character's mom.
Yeah.
So he goes deep dive on talk about like people's body and
images.
So
yeah.
But also, and he does it like in a like very like non pleasant manner. So it like kind of just kind of grosses you out a little
bit. Yeah, in a vile way.
Yes.
But yeah, so Johnny thankfully gets to head home to his dad for Christmas. And at this point, is just going to like live with his dad for a little bit. However, it's not done with Johnny being bothered by other people wanting to use his powers.
And I will say, I really like the way David Cronenberg does this. Through the movie, he doesn't give you a timestamp. He doesn't give you 3 years later.
You just notice little things. Like, for instance, in this scene, the Christmas tree is in the living room and the cop makes a comment. That's a beautiful Christmas tree. Yeah. You got a nice Christmas tree. But then the next time you see the living room, there is no Christmas tree. Yeah. So you can tell, okay, we've moved past that season.
Yeah, and I like that because he knows, like, he's like, listen here, I don't have to spell it out for the audience. I don't have to put timestamps.
Yeah.
They are smart enough. They'll understand that time has passed. They don't need to know it's also, been 6 months later.
If you're paying attention or listening enough to the book or the movie, you'll pick up on those signs in general.
It's just well done where like when a director trusts their audience enough, like I don't need to hold their hand through this.
Oh, yeah.
They'll get it. You know what I mean? And I think
that's like when people do like PowerPoints and stuff, but they feel the need to read to you every little thing on the PowerPoint page. And it's like, I can read. Like, you don't need to read me every little word on your PowerPoint page.
That's our conferences every Friday.
Yeah.
It's people just reading off PowerPoints.
You better hope that no one's listening to this from your work.
No, it's fine. I'm just saying that's what it, I mean, we like you read the PowerPoint. That's what you do. That's how you, that's your presentation.
You can sum it up and while you sum it up, people can, you know, read the PowerPoint page.
Yeah, yeah. But
ideally.
But yeah, so
So Sheriff Bannerman comes to the house, asks for Johnny's help, and the sheriff pretty much mentions, you know, I'm not religious or anything, but what you have, you know, if you want to call it God's gift, then you should use it to do, you know, godly things.
Yeah, and that's when Johnny just blows up. He's like, God's gift. What did God ever give me?
Yeah.
God took things away from me. He didn't give me nothing. Yeah. You know what I mean? And that's all, that is... That's, I like scenes like that where someone blows up. I mean, this is literally like our Spider-Man scene.
Yeah, and at this point, you don't know what it feels like for Johnny to have those visions. You get that in a conversation shortly between Johnny and his dad right after this scene.
Yeah.
So you just think he's just having these visions and maybe they're intense or anything because he doesn't necessarily show any pain. I mean, you could tell that they're intense and he's really gripping on the person's hand.
Yeah.
But after the sheriff leaves, his dad tells him, you know, your mom would always would be the best person to be here for you right now. She would know how to talk about this. But do you want to talk about it? And Johnny tells him, you know, no, I kind of, you know, whatever, just want to be left alone. Or kind of gives off that hint. But his dad does ask him, like, what does it feel like? Mm-hmm. Like, what does it feel like? And that's when Johnny tells his dad, it feels like dying.
Yeah, it feels like every single time he does it, it's
I
taking
feel like some, I'm dying.
Yeah, something's being taken away from him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You know, he basically, more time has passed, because this is when like Becca brought up, like, the Christmas tree has been gone after their little conversation, and Sarah comes up and pays him a visit.
But you can tell it's still winter, because they're all dressed up in their winter coats, and there's snow on the ground, and all that kind
of
stuff.
Which a lot of this movie was filmed in Ontario. I mean, last year, it's extremely cold up there, and it definitely looks, this is definitely good place to film the film, and when they filmed it, everything, the snow and everything, it looks perfect. It looks perfect for the film.
It also gives off the perfect crunch, which
I didn't like that. I didn't like it. I don't like that, like stepping on snow, that crunch.
That
I don't
icy
like it.
Snow where it has ice on top. But yeah, so Sarah comes to visit, and she brings her son with her. What's her son's name again?
Oh man, I hope you didn't ask that. I forgot.
Johnny's his name, but then the son, what is the son's name? It'll come to me in a second. Anyway, so she comes to visit and she brings her son and they're all kind of playing at the house.
Danny?
Yes. Because as soon as they said it, I thought about The Shining.
Yeah,
and I'm like, wait, I don't think there's a link here because
these
are Danny's parents. Well, Sarah and her husband.
Yeah, I think
anyways,
it's Danny.
It is. But so Sarah and Danny come to visit. And Johnny gets to play with Danny and all that kind of stuff. And Sarah puts him down for a nap. And they want to Sarah makes the proposition to briefly rekindle what they never got to finish.
Yeah, exactly. She wants to start what she never got. She wants to start what she never got to start.
Yeah,
much.
What neither of them got to start, which they felt that they wanted with each other. Mm-hmm. And Johnny did bring to her attention the fact back at the hospital that, you know, Sarah had 5 years to progress through this, to move on. He woke up with the same feelings he had the day of his accident.
Oh, yeah.
This is very new for him.
He didn't get 5 years for it to cool off
and
move on.
And move on or to accept it or to have any say in it, as a matter of fact. His life moved on with or without it.
Yeah. And then this scene, like the moving forward after this, like where they're at the dinner table and just like that longing where like almost like Johnny feels like there's hope that he's going to get what he wants.
Yeah.
And then. But it's not. It was just a one day event.
Yeah, and then they leave after dinner, and even.
Well, I do want to bring up. I really like Christopher Walken is a phenomenal actor.
Oh yeah,
I mean,
he's really good to watch.
I mean, and Deer Hunter, he was great. And this is definitely early in his. You know, 1983 is when the film came out, so this is early into his career. And he hadn't became the Christopher Walken as we know now, more silly like Christopher Walken, and everyone likes to mimic the way he talks and so forth. But that scene, I will say, I would put that on one of his. If I was him, like I'll put that on one of my reel as like one of the best acting scenes I have. But that scene when he's outside talking to Sarah, tell me that's I would completely believe that's a man going through it. I don't even feel like that's acting. It just seems so raw and real. I love that scene.
Yeah, absolutely. So as Sarah's leaving, he kind of brings up like what was this or what is this going to be? And Sarah just makes it clear that this was just today.
Yeah.
This is just one day.
His dad even says something. He was like, I miss having kids around.
Oh, yeah, I miss sitting around this dinner table.
I miss sitting around the dinner table with a family.
Yeah.
And then he pulls out the old high chair that he made for John. Oh, my God.
It's a heavy scene.
That's so sad. I cried a little bit when we watched it.
I get it. So ultimately, I mean, Sarah does make it very clear what it was and what it wasn't, essentially. But Johnny does decide to reach back out to Sheriff Bannerman and help him out.
And did you take it? And the way I took it is like kind of like seeing Sarah again kind of made him like maybe like look, have a different look on life. Like maybe I need to use these powers for good. Do you feel like that? Like, because that's when he makes the decision.
Yeah, I mean, maybe.
Well,
I mean, if you really want to think.
It's not the same night. I guess it's not the same night because he sees the news video of them talking about the most recent murder. And I feel like that's when he's like, I'm going to help them.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to help them. So.
Yeah. So, I mean, it might be intertwined, but I'm not too sure. So Johnny heads to Castle Rock, and he goes to the first location with Sheriff Bannerman and Sheriff Dodd, or Officer Dodd.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they're in this tunnel that Sheriff Bannerman mentions, you know, I always tell the kids at Castle Rock School to not take this shortcut, but they like taking it. And they give Johnny the suspect's cigarette box, and unfortunately he doesn't pick anything up from it. But while trying to, they get radioed that there was another murder at the gazebo.
Yeah, and this scene's really, really good.
Yeah.
Like, where they walk them through the process, and that in the book we get a lot of Steve Dodd talking, a lot of it.
You mean
Frank Dodd talking. And a lot of his inner monologue, because he keeps on talking to himself. And then we get a back history of like he was.
Yeah, because spoiler alert, 1, 2, 3. I'll give you guys a second. Frank Dodd's the murderer.
Yeah. So we get a lot of like he was like sexually abused when he was little.
Yeah.
And like he was a lot of like his mom was like just very, you know. You put your penis in a woman, it's gonna fall off, like very like anti-sex and stuff like that, which just made him like have all this sexual
anger towards it,
and sexual frustrations, and just caused a lot of mental problems, which led him to like killing people, women basically, and then raping them, which is it's really rough in the movie. In the book, definitely, but you get a lot of, he keeps on calling himself slick. Mm. You're not going to catch it because you're so damn slick. Mm. I don't know. And in the worst part of the, I will say the worst part of the audiobook is it's read by James Franco, and it's not
James Franco.
Yeah, it's horrible. Horrible.
I'd like to be horrible. A little narrator. Apparently you can like reach out to some apps and get like, my coworker mentioned it. Some apps will like, have you narrate something, and then if they do like the sound of your voice and the narration, you can like have a little side hustle just, narrating books.
He reads it so goddamn lazily. Mm. So lazy. And it's just kind of like, I feel like the entire time I'm listening to like the way he's talking, I'm like, it reminded me of his character and Pineapple Express, the weed dealer, where he's like, wait a second, man. You mean the car doesn't start? And I feel like that's that scene where they're like, no, the car doesn't start. Are you joking with me? And like that part in that movie is like that, the way he reads the entire book. He reads it very lazily. I can be very hard. I'm sorry. I don't mean to be very hard on him, but like, that's just, I didn't like
it. I don't think James Franco cares. But
he probably
fine.
Does. He ain't gonna ever
see. So you're fine to say it.
but yeah, so we get back to the scene. So we get the scene where basically he goes to the fresh body and she's laying there around the gazebo. And he touches her. And this is the first we get the most immersive flash vision.
Yeah, so he's actually like there in the gazebo with them.
Yeah.
And at first he can't see who it is, but he sees the girl and the guy addresses the girl by name. So he starts talking to the sheriff saying they know each other. He said her name.
And he's wearing a raincoat, which is very big in the book. He wore a raincoat every time he had
these murders. Emphasize it here as well. But then also Johnny starts to panic the murder and happens or whatever, because he didn't do anything about it.
I couldn't do anything.
And also while he's rambling on, he realizes that it's Dodd, because he sees his face, and Dodd's also standing right there guarding the gazebo. And in his, repetitive words to Officer Bannerman, he states, Dodd did it. It's Dodd. And when he comes back to, before you know it, Sheriff Bannerman calls for Dodd to come here, and he's gone.
And then the book, when this happens, this scene's a little bit longer, because Bannerman gets in a fight with Johnny. Like, they literally get in a physical fight. He's like, I've known him ever since he was X, Y, and Z years old. There's no way that Officer Dodd killed these people. Mm-hmm. There's something wrong with you. Mm-hmm. And it's a very, and that's one of those, like, it's one of those scenes where like, no, just to believe him. It's very, the book.
It's very intense.
Very intense. And it's, I didn't, like, that was one of the first times, like, I experienced that in like in like a book form versus watching it visually. And I'm like, oh, I see how people can get worked up over reading a book. It's very, because this book is very much like that. Mm-hmm. Like you get, it's a lot of like, it is definitely high on the thrill side.
Oh yeah.
And it, when you're either listening to someone read it to you or you're reading it, you know, I can definitely see how that intensity really plays over to like, you feel it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so they know that, It's Dot. So they're going to, they're like, where's Dot at? And he's like, oh, he just left in your cop car, sir. So they follow him into his house and, you know, they see him in the window and they're like,
well, Officer Bannerman doesn't see him. He tells Johnny to stay back at the car.
Yeah.
Well, he goes to the door and Johnny notices him in the top window, the top floor window. And Officer Dodd sees Johnny down there and Officer Bannerman's at the door knocking. And his mother answers and says, you know, he's not here, he's not here. Well, he's like, well, his car's here. She's like, well, he's not here. And Johnny doesn't listen and comes up to the front door and says, yeah, you know, I saw him in the window. He's upstairs. So Officer Bannerman busts in the door and they both head upstairs.
Yeah, and they head upstairs, and this is when Johnny gets he touches the mom.
Yeah.
And that's where he gets fired. He's like, oh, you knew this entire time?
Yeah.
You knew he was killing these ladies? Like, you knew. Like, oh, that's a good scene. That's a good scene. And we get, you know, a lot of, like, you know, David Cronenberg movies were known for their gore, which this movie doesn't really have any gore, except this is the only gore scene where basically we find out that Officer Dodd has killed himself in the bathroom by the weirdest.
Yeah, he stabbed himself in like the face and the mouth with an open pair of scissors, which was how he was killing women, which was stabbing him with scissors.
Yeah, very weird. And then after they find him dead, they go to leave, and his mother's just batshit fucking crazy.
They didn't just go to leave. Johnny was about to shoot her.
No.
Well, why did he grab a gun?
No, that's her grabbing the gun.
Oh.
Yeah, that's her grabbing her son's gun.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. No, Johnny wasn't going to shoot nobody.
Oh.
No, that's her grabbing the gun.
Because you didn't see a hand, so I just thought it was him.
Well, you just see the hand pull the gun out of the holster. Yeah. That was her, yeah. And then she starts trying to kill Johnny because she says he's the devil. And then that's when Bannerman comes out and ends up, like, you know, killing the mom.
After she shot Johnny.
Yeah. So, I mean, it just sucks. Like, he's like, he uses these abilities and powers to help.
And they put him in unfortunate situations.
Yeah.
So Dr. Wyzak pays Johnny a visit at his new home. Johnny has decided he's going to live on his own, which is also, he more or less just wanted to be alone.
Yeah,
to be a hermit.
We get another another future date.
We've moved forward. And not only has Johnny moved out on his own in this little apartment, but he's also tutoring children again. Not necessarily teaching, but tutoring them. So Dr. Wyzak pays him a visit and just explains to Johnny that, you know, you still are my patient. You're still under my watch. So we do need to stay connected somehow.
Yeah,
some way.
And then while they're speaking, this is when Johnny, we see he's been having headaches.
Yeah.
And then this is kind of like, this is the point in the book where it was like, listen here, Johnny, you've got a tumor. You're dying.
Mm.
Obviously that's not the path we took in the movie. But, you know, unfortunately, based off of his doctor's research, he found that other people like this all suffer from the exact same thing. And eventually it leads to their demise and they die from their gifts.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to give him pills to like hold it off as much as possible. But only way that Johnny feels that he can do is just by not socializing with people, not coming in contact.
He's less likely to have the visions.
Exactly.
Essentially elongating his life.
Exactly.
So while Johnny is having, you know, guests come and go, Roger Stewart comes up and asks Johnny to meet his son, Chris. And at first, I thought this was, like, going to be some sort of, like, ploy, like, something fake to
Johnny
in a weird scenario. Because you also have, like, because then when it pans over to the next day, so Saturday morning, Johnny's going to meet Roger's son, Chris, to help him be a little bit more social, learn, because Chris is refusing to go to school. He gets there and the senator's already there. So that's why I was like, oh, is this some weird like government setup that they pulled Johnny into?
Got it. Then
you realize it was just the Senate, you know, pushing his campaign.
Yeah. So this part, and now this is what I'll get to, like, This is the biggest difference in the book. Chris's character in the book versus the movie. This is where, and I cannot see that maybe they choose it to be different due to cost, because the Chris storyline in the book, I believe, is far better than what we got in the movie. Chris is also a teenager, and he is actually in high school, and Chris is not like, yes, his dad is a rich man, but he's not this kind of like outsider kid. He is a very popular kid. He likes playing sports and stuff like that. And he's more of a jock, but he has a hard time reading and remembering what he read. Yeah. And basically through their work, Johnny finds out he has this thing where it's more of a, he's afraid of reading. And due to this fear of reading, he's not able to retain what he has read. It's like almost like a public speaking kind of like phobia, but like for reading. And he works them through learning that process and gives them these tools and like stimulates them in order to start to retain what he reads, and he starts doing very well in school. And he's, you know, it goes to the point where, like, you know, we get to, like the dance, like they've been working for so long. So now he's moved up a couple years. He's doing well. And he's like doing, he's going to a dance, and after the dance, everyone's going to meet at like a restaurant style, like bar and have a, you know, like a party or something like that. And it's where all everyone goes. It's where all the rich people go. All the people at school are going to be there. And Johnny touches Chris, and he's like, he gets another like burning vision of the bar burning down, people being trapped in there, and they're burning alive. And he tells Chris, you can't go. And like, you know, and we get this long story with Chris and his girlfriend and stuff like that. And, you know, he tells the dad, was it George? What's his name? Greg. No. What was dad's name again?
Roger.
He tells Roger, he's like, listen here, Roger, your son can't go. He can't go. He's like, there's nothing wrong. Why do you feel this way, Johnny? He's like, I can't explain to you, but he can't go. And he goes, you know, you're sounding crazy, Johnny. He's like, I know, but you, goddamn it, you got to listen to me. And over their conversation, he's like, listen here, if you don't want him to go, he won't go. Do you want to go, Chris? He's like, and Chris is like, if Johnny doesn't think I should go, I'm not going to go.
Yeah.
Because we've gotten little things here and there through the storyline in the book of like what's going on. Like maybe there might be something with Johnny, but we don't really know. And he agrees to him. He's like, he's not going to go. And then the dad is very supportive of Johnny. The dad in the movie obviously thinks Johnny's fucking crazy.
Yeah.
I don't like that. I like the way the book did it better. And I would say this is the only thing that the book did better.
Yeah. So ultimately, while Johnny is working with Roger's son, he ends up getting paid a visit by Sarah, and as well as her husband, because they are helping Greg Stilson with his campaign. And unfortunately, this really upsets Johnny. So when he closes the door after being greeted by Sarah and her husband, he starts crying. And Chris tries to console him, and in doing so, Johnny hugs Chris and has a vision of Chris and his hockey team drowning in the lake, like ice hockey team.
Yeah, it's a very powerful scene. Don't get me wrong, it's very depressing and sad. It feels like it works well with the movie. I will say, like the changes, I don't mind it to agree as far as like, do I like the scene? No, I like the scene. I just think the book one was very well done. And like that, it was definitely much more of a, almost kind of like a Final Destination style, like death. And a lot of kids die and they get burned alive. I'm like, and it's very, very like descriptive.
Mass casualty style.
Yeah. Very descriptive. What we got here was definitely on a smaller portions when I definitely see how it could fit the budget restraints better. So I understand the changes. It just does suck that, like, I would have liked to seen that visually. But yes, basically, he has his argument with Chris's dad, Roger. And then Roger kind of is like, okay, fine. If you don't want him to go, he won't go. But you're not working for me anymore.
Yeah, still, like, don't come near my son. And Chris also is very hesitant on listening to his father about going to the hockey practice. And he's more on Johnny's side where he doesn't want to go. If there's something going to happen, why would he want to go?
And then Johnny goes back and touches Chris's hand. And he's like, okay. All right.
Everything's fine.
Everything's okay, Chris. Everything's fine.
And so he parts ways. And then you get a little view into Greg Stilson and his partner, Sonny. They are harassing a journalist that pushed an article to bash Stilson and Stilson's campaign. So they got some dirty pictures or pretty much blackmail on the journalist, and they're there to threaten him to pull the article or else they're going to blackmail him to his wife and his family.
Well, he straight up also tells me, like, if you don't do it, I'm just going to kill you.
Yeah, like, yeah. I'll have my buddy Sonny here take your head off.
Which Sonny, in the book, the story behind Sonny is he's literally, like, was in a biker gang. He was just a brutal, mean son of a bitch. And he met Greg, and he just basically was like, I need a man like you working for me as muscle.
Yeah, yeah.
And basically, that's all Sonny is. He's just an evil person that has no problem with doing evil things.
So, unfortunately, Johnny comes across a news article, and Chris's friends that were going to play hockey with him still went that day and played hockey, and they drowned in the lake.
Yeah, and it's just sad. You see that scene.
And you also see his dad.
Yeah, where Johnny calls and the phone's just ringing and ringing.
And his dad's just sitting there drinking whiskey, just not answering. Because, I mean, Johnny was right, and Roger blew up on him for it and almost forced Chris to still go do it.
And that's the reason why we didn't see Chris die is because Chris didn't go.
Yeah.
So he thought everything was fine.
Dad came back to still convince him, he pretty much was like, no, I'm not going. If Johnny doesn't want me to go, I'm not going.
Yeah.
So eventually Chris answers the phone and Johnny doesn't say anything. And Chris realizes it's Johnny and asks him, like, you know, Johnny, and he still doesn't say anything and just hangs up the phone.
Yeah.
And then you get some time has passed based off what you're seeing. Now it's starting to close in on the campaign, essentially.
Yeah, and then we get basically, we see more. So the first meeting when Johnny actually first met Greg Stilson, he actually didn't get to actually touch him.
Yeah.
He got this vision that we're about to get soon. He went and got it because he put a button in his hand.
Yeah.
And as things have progressed, as his campaign grows larger, it does seem like he's going to win and his goal is to be made president one day.
Yeah. And Roger already shared with Johnny, because Johnny tells him he's not registered to vote. And Roger is asking Johnny's opinion on, you know,
Stilson.
And he's like, well, you should register simply to not vote for this guy.
Yeah, to vote against him.
He looks like he's going to win. And I don't like him.
Yeah, he's like, I think he calls him like dangerous. These kind of men are dangerous.
Yeah, dangerous. Yeah.
Basically, he sees Greg coming to town.
Yeah.
And they're going to do like a little thing as they do. That's basically what they've been building that little billboard for or whatever.
Yeah, out front of Johnny's apartment.
Yeah. And so he's like, okay, well, he's curious. And he's like, I kind of want to meet this guy.
Yeah.
So he knows he's going to do the handshake. So he waits in line, waits for his turn. And when he touches Greg Stilson's hand, we get this vision far into the future where he is president. And we got the over the military.
Mm-hmm.
And he's basically telling me, listen here, if you do not, we see a box. We see a missile launching box device where it needs to be a handprint and then a code is like a dual locking system and a dual authorization system. And basically he's telling him, he's like, if you do not do this, I'm going to fucking kill you, cut your dad's hand off and use that. And I'll do it anyway. And we find out that there's been some kind of conflict. And Greg believes that he had a vision when he went to bed at night that he was going to be, basically he was going to fulfill the destiny and, stop whatever was going to happen by basically putting his foot on the throat of whatever country that is entailed, because it's very vague, basically.
Yeah.
So he's just going to blow the shit out of them. And he's like, listen here, no one's going to mess with us because we're going to kill them all.
Yeah.
Basically a mass suicide of innocent people.
Yeah.
And
well, mass murder.
It's not mass murder. Suicide. Yeah, not mass suicide. But yeah, so he basically we get this vision of him doing so, sending out the missiles, and then everyone else from Congress, the vice president, show up. Like, we've actually worked on a response. Everything's gonna be fine. And he's like, the boys, the missiles are flying. It's a great day. He's fucking crazy.
Yeah. So Johnny now knows this and doesn't really know what to do with that information. So he gets another visit by Dr. Weizak, and he asks Dr. Weizak, if you had known who Hitler was before Hitler did what he did, would you have killed him?
Yeah.
And, you know, long story short, Dr. Weizak essentially says, I'd have to.
Yeah.
You know, I as a doctor, I've saved lives. I've made people comfortable at the end of their life. And with knowing what I know now, I would kill Hitler.
Yeah, he's like, my goal is to take care of people.
Yeah.
And knowing, and that would be, I would have to fill my service by taking care of the people.
Yeah.
By killing Hitler.
Yeah, so that's all Johnny needs to hear. So Johnny waits to, till Greg's big announcement and everything for his campaign, and he decides he's going to assassinate him.
Yes.
So he gets up into the rafters and with a rifle. And however, right before he goes to assassinate Greg, Sarah, her child, and her husband get up on stage with Greg, because obviously her husband's intertwined with Stilson's campaign somehow, one way or another.
Yeah, he's just a supporter. He's just a local supporter. Yeah. And then, like, he's supposed to be a man of the people. So all his local supporters and the people that have been working with him, actually working on the campaign in that area, you know, he's going to bring them on stage.
Yeah. So,
and it looks good to have a baby and stuff like that. Yeah. You know what I mean? All that kind of
So, however, he fires one shot and misses Greg, but gets the attention of everybody. And Greg, without fail, grabs Danny to use him as a human baby shield.
Yeah. And then
from being shot at. And Sonny shoots up.
Yeah.
And actually somewhat hits Greg. Or not Greg, hits Johnny.
And he falls off the rafters and falls into the ground.
And he's laying on the ground, and he ends up getting a vision that...
Yeah, because Greg Stilson runs up to him, and he's like, who sent you, you son of a bitch? Who sent you? And that's when he touches him, and then he gets the vision that you're talking about.
Yeah, the vision where Greg's campaign's ruined anyway at this point, dead or alive, because he used a fucking baby as a shield.
Yeah, and there was a photographer there that took a picture and got it and sells it to Newsweek.
Yeah. So at this point, Johnny doesn't care if he dies or not, because either way, he wins. Either way, he wins, because Greg's ruined no matter what. He also gets a vision that because of this released photograph, Greg Stilson kills himself.
Yeah. And the thing is like, this scene, I like this. This is where the book, this is where the movie did it better. This, because it's very, like, you really, with the vision and the book, he just sees colors.
Mm-hmm.
And then by the time, and he sees these colors, he's trying to make out what it is. By the time it gets to the end of the movie, by the time it gets in the book, and he sees the vision again, you find out it's the colors in the little boy's jacket.
Mm.
And then the vision was of Greg holding up the little boy, you know, as a human shield.
Yeah.
Because it's this weird journey that we get with him, like, kind of like unraveling this mystery, and he's just having this connection to Greg Stilson, and he just has this connection, like, this guy's not right. Mm-hmm. And he's just kind of like he's like just following that path, and the movie, I think it does it a lot better. Mm-hmm. I think this is where the movie gets a double win for me.
So unfortunately, Johnny does die, and before he dies, Sarah runs up and hugs him, and Johnny gets a chance to tell Sarah that he loves her.
Yeah,
and then that's pretty much the end.
Yeah, and in the book, it goes on a little bit more, where there's like an epilogue where it's kind of like people interviewing people, do you think Johnny Smith actually has the ability of telekinesis, but like psychic abilities? Mm-hmm. And a lot of people, and like, they're basically going up against on record, they're like in a court, and he's like, no, he definitely does. This is not made up. He actually has psychic abilities.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like what they did, like in Carrie, there's a lot of interview style conversations in Carrie, with people talking to books, newspapers, and so forth, to tell the story of Carrie. Mm-hmm. And then you also get the story of Carrie, the made-for-TV movie did that very well, because that's exactly what they did that a lot in the made-for-TV movie.
Yeah.
But all those films, you know, bringing it to a conclusion, what did you think about the movie?
Yeah, I mean, I liked it. It was a very heartfelt movie. Awesome. It's a person that...
We got another win, guys.
I liked it.
We got another win.
That's the middle of the totem pole. but yeah, I mean, it's a very heartfelt thing. Something that happens, something really, really bad happens to someone, and they find a silver lining in it, even if it means that it leads to their own demise, to, you know, help essentially their loved one. Like you said, it does seem like his driving factor is at least what he once had with Sarah. Mm-hmm. Although he can't have it anymore, he still feels very deeply, like, connected to her. So that's very, like, love story-esque.
Yeah. I love love stories, too.
Yeah.
It's very...
Oh, yeah. I love love. I always say that.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah. So it was good. Like, I would definitely rewatch it. It also has, like, chef's kiss runtime. Perfect. An hour and 45 minutes. That's right at my alley.
Well, also, this movie, like, it happens like this happens. No, this happens.
Yeah, it's not a bunch of extra stuff. When a bunch of extra stuff starts to happen, I stop caring.
And that was the one thing that a lot of people, and there was complaints about the book, was a lot of people said there was a lot of extra stuff in the book that was completely unnecessary to the story.
Yeah.
So like this book, even though it's on the thinner side of some of like Stephen King's books, what's called, it actually has a lot of stuff, to be honest, that could be just taken out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for example, like this book and Firestarter are the exact same length, but the extra stuff and the extra storylines in Firestarter
matter
and are much more compelling to the story. It makes you care about the characters more. Yeah. A lot of this book is on Sonny, Greg Stilson, characters I don't give a shit about.
Yeah.
Because they're mean people. I you can give me one story why Greg Stilson's mean. I don't need three stories of how awful things that Greg Stilson has done. I don't need to hear all this backstory about Sonny. You can just say he's a mean person.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, or you really don't need to give him a story at all. Just know he's the muscle and just that's it. So there is some part that's a little bit bloated in here. There was a scene, to my knowledge, there was a scene that was shot, but they could never find it. And I think it was removed, but it was the early stages, the scene where Johnny is young and he falls in through the ice at Ike's hockey pond. Like
a pond, yes. Yeah. You're struggling to say a pond.
Well, I would say hockey skating rink, but I'm like, is that, can you say that as for a pond?
No, it's just ice hockey on a lake.
Okay, yeah.
Pond whatever. Hockey.
Whatever. And he comes to like a near death experience or whatever. So like that was big part of the book. It opens with that. And they actually filmed that, but they cut it from the movie.
Nixed it.
And then apparently like the film was lost. So like, even though I have this really nice, Shout Factory DVD, DVD Blu-ray, which is really nice. It was, to my knowledge, it was never being able to be recovered.
Gotcha. But yeah, I like it. I would rewatch it. I obviously know you would rewatch it.
Yeah.
I'll probably never read or listen to the book, but.
Well, I mean, it's like, I seen this one. Like obviously I saw the movie first and then went to the book. But as far as like movies, well, like I think this movie's better than Christine. If you want to do movie comparisons of Stephen King's books, I think this movie is, it's not better than Cujo because I really like Cujo, but as a movie adaptation, I think it's very well done as far as an enjoyable adaptation of a Stephen King book.
Mm-hmm.
I really like it. I can't think of anything that's like better. I mean, I just really like Cujo. Gerald Game is very close. Another good adaptation, as far as a newer one. That one's rough. But as far as like coming like Misery, like the book, Misery book, I think was better than the film. You know, my view on Shining, the book is 10 times better than the movie. But I think David Kohlberg knocked it out of the park on this one. And the artistic changes that he made, I think were perfect. I think it's a movie that I don't feel like it's talked about enough. It made a very successful TV show. I think it was on the USA Network. You know, I didn't really care for the show because that was also coming out one time. Like I didn't really care for like those kind of like USA and TNT shows and stuff like that. I just didn't give a shit. But, it was very successful because they made several seasons. So
nice.
But yeah, I'm a fan, and I'm very happy that you like it.
That's good to know. But yeah. So thank you guys for listening. Yeah, like always, like, subscribe, follow, all that good stuff. Leave us a rating on any of your streaming services. And we will be back next time. Sound good?
Yeah.
See ya.
See ya. Bye.